Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with our buddy Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the auto repair and service industry for over 30 years. Prior to starting his own business in Hoosick Falls, Gordon worked as an automotive tech, senior advisor, and assistant service manager for Volkswagens, Porsches, Audis in Massachusetts, right?
Yes.
Massachusetts.
Natick, Mass.
Way back. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There'll be a Vox Pop post there. The Pope will not be involved in the program today, although he can call in if he wants. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, but again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. So, Pope, give us a call, or if you're not the Pope, you can also call as well. So I asked around in the newsroom about any car questions before the show started, and the prevailing question was, how do you hotwire a car?
Well, that was a good old term back when you could hotwire a car.
Now, the first question is why someone in the newsroom would want to hotwire the car.
Any old vintage cars out there that they want stolen?
Probably. I got to ask Brian Shields. I bet you he's up to something in there. So
back in the day, you could do that. Cars like your 65 Le Mans, my 65 Riviera. No steering lock, no interlock with the brake taking it out of park. Just a basic old ignition switch that had three or four wires coming out of it. So you basically needed to provide power to the ignition system, and you needed to get something to get the starter cranking. And, it really was literally rigging up two wires in one temporarily to get the starter going, and you could take the car.
Okay. Well, but
can't do it now.
Again, if you're listening at home and there are old cars around, please don't do that. We're not suggesting that you do that, but
it is possible.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to the phones, and Gina in Rhinebeck, you're on.
Hey, thanks, guys. I don't know, maybe I should pray to the Pope for my problem. Coming to you instead.
Okay.
First, I have to say I absolutely love my mechanic. You're too far for me to go to, Gordon, but I love my mechanic. He's the best, I think, in the Hudson Valley. But my brakes were going very, very soft, and I had been ignoring it, of course. And so they were all the way almost down to the metal. So he redid the brakes, he bled the lines and put in brand new fluid. But he said, if they stay soft, I might have to have the brake master cylinder done, which is a lot more expensive. And he always does the least expensive thing first, which is another great thing about him. But so I'm just driving it now for the first few days after getting it back. And it does kind of still seem soft. If I pump it, it goes back hard, comes back firm.
Yep.
But if I'm just driving and have to put on the brakes fast, it kind of goes pretty far before it breaks.
Mm. Yeah. Well, here's an easy thing for you to do to test that master cylinder. And you don't need to be moving. You just need to be sitting in the vehicle with the engine running. Just leave it in park and apply pressure to the brake pedal. And don't apply severe pressure more than you'd ever press down if you were trying to stop. But give it some normal pressure like you were slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
And then just keep your foot on the pedal and try to keep the pressure constant. And if you find that brake pedal is sinking under your foot, and if you maintain that same pressure in it after, let's say, 10, 15, 20 seconds, it has sunk close to the floor, you could have a potential master cylinder that is bypassing internally. That means the fluid is getting around the seals inside this particular unit.
And so the seals go bad.
Yes, but you don't leak anything because it's happening internally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of a really good test to confirm whether the master cylinder can hold and maintain brake pressure.
And is that just a function of age, not of me, of course, but of the car?
Yeah, basically. Master cylinders used to fail a lot more often than they did. The materials are much better, and they're more precisely built. And maybe the quality of the brake fluids are better, and the ability for the systems to keep the moisture out. But master cylinders still will fail, and it's more common on a much older, higher mileage vehicle.
But you fix the seals, or do you have to replace the entire master cylinder?
Nowadays, you just replace the component. You get another master cylinder.
But can you get a used one of that, or should you get a new one?
No, it's not a, not a good thing to do.
What about aftermarket?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to find them remanufactured in a lot of cases through you know, your auto parts chains.
Okay.
So that could be your problem, but you can have a soft or a lot of travel pedal for other reasons. But that'll be your quick test that you can do yourself.
Very cool. Thank you very much. Have a great day, you guys.
Okay. Thanks, Gina. We appreciate it. Let's go to line two. Francis is on the phone. I don't know if it's, well, is this Pope Francis?
Yes.
Well, welcome to the program.
How are you?
Good. You're on.
I have a 2009 Toyota Tacoma. And I usually change the oil in it myself, and I usually get oil that matches the specs of the manual, but the cheapest I can lay my hands on. The last time the oil was changed was by a mechanic, however, and he used the most expensive synthetic oils you could get. And when I asked him why, he said that this particular engine really requires, you know, synthetic oils. And I don't know if he's right or not.
Yeah, I don't know on that specific truck. I don't think that Toyota required or recommended synthetic. A lot of car manufacturers are. And it started out with turbocharged engines, and then a lot of your higher-end European cars were switching over to synthetic oil. And a lot of it has to do with the types of valve trains that cars have today. It's called variable cam timing or variable valve timing. And they're very sensitive to deteriorated oil and clogging up passages and causing really massive problems later in the vehicle's life. My suggestion is always to generally cut the oil change intervals in half because they're too wide now.
Yeah.
A lot of them are at 7,500 miles. Some of them are at 10,000 miles. And in the real world of driving in adverse conditions, which we have, it's way too long. And whoever owns the car when that valve train gives up is going to have a massive expense on their hands. So to go back to your question, you should use oils that meet or exceed what your owner's manual says to put in it and use the correct weight that they recommend. And if it doesn't specify synthetic, you don't have to do it, but you should change it often. And, you know, like I said, more often than they specify in a lot of cases.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Francis. We appreciate the call. You know, that brings up a point. You go to the oil change places, any, I'm not saying any particular one,
right,
but if you go to some of the chains, you'll often be sold, regardless
yes.
of the cars, you got to have synthetic.
Well, it's
thing.
An upsell for them.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, is it strictly speaking necessary most of the time?
Not in most cases, unless your car calls for it.
Is it good anyway?
It is. You know, do you need it in older cars if you change it regularly with conventional motor oil? I don't know if there's much benefit. There is some. You know, it's better. It holds up better in cold temperatures. It's a little more viscous.
Yeah.
And it can trap more contaminants. So, yes, it's not a wives' tale. There's definitely a benefit.
There are advantages.
Yes.
All right, back to the phones we go. Our guest is Gordon Fricke and Peter in Poughkeepsie. You're next.
Hello. I was having an ordinary routine oil change at a place that I haven't been to before. And at the conclusion of the routine ordinary oil change, this new mechanic said, oh, we also diagnosed you with having a leaking strut. And they were specific enough. They said front driver leaking strut. And I'm just an ordinary person. I look on the floor of my garage and I look in the driveway and I don't see any puddling fluid. So if, in fact, I have this leaking strut, is there any way for me to tell? And how crucial or how important was that diagnosis?
Yeah. And that's not uncommon at all. The struts are just very large shock absorbers. and they contain hydraulic fluid, some type of oil, and it's sealed in there. And eventually the strut or shock wears and the seals deteriorate, and the shock fluid does start to leak out. And they don't hold quarts of oil like your engine, so by the time that has reached the bottom of the strut and dripped on the floor, it's in really bad shape.
Yeah.
So the telltale that the struts are beginning to deteriorate or fail is that is you look to see if there's some shock fluid coming out of the top. A little bit of weepage is in often cases not a problem. In fact, Honda had a bulletin years ago to not condemn struts if you just see wetness at the top but not leakage. So the question for your vehicle is, how much of it's coming out, and is the ride deteriorating? And you can check that yourself by bouncing the front of the car up and down and just seeing how it reacts. And if it's very stiff and stable and doesn't bounce three or four times after you let it go, you're still okay. But it's definitely worth keeping track of, because when the struts fail, there's such an integral part of the suspension that it can be very difficult to drive, and it's going to hammer through bumps. So as long as it's correct what they're saying, they're on the, you know, they're doing you a favor by watching it or telling you that that's what they've seen.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest is Gordon Fricke, and we'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Maybe Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, presenting the Let's Eat exhibit and lecture series, exploring food, culture, technology, and history, featuring A Taste of Upstate New York with author Chuck D'Imperio on Saturday, January 30th at 2 p.m. SchenectadyHistorical.org. Nine Pin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple. NinePinCider.com. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, 100 Waterville Ave, Albany, New York. Specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. HonestWade.coop. And Curran Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota. National Compliance and Regulatory Consultants for life insurance carriers and their distribution partners. CurrentCompliance.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our number, or voxpop@wamc.org if you prefer to go the email route. Ray Graff here, joined today by Gordon Fricke, and we talk automotive maintenance and repair. And Joe in Pittsfield, it's your turn.
Hi, Gordon.
How are you?
Excellent. Hey, I have a 2009 Hyundai Elantra, and every now and then the anti-theft alarm just goes off. And then I'll have to take the key fob and obviously shut it off. And then the next day might be 2 o'clock in the morning and the alarm goes off. And then the next day might be 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I call the dealer and he thinks that I might have a bad battery. But I have no indications that the battery's bad. What do you think?
Well, when the battery does get weak and go below a certain voltage, it will turn a lot of these anti-theft alarms on. But you would probably be noticing that the car is hard to start or needed a jump start periodically.
Exactly. I haven't had any of those issues yet.
Yeah. So when it does that, it starts fine like there was no problem.
Right.
Okay.
No
so
problem.
Yeah. So the weak battery, I don't think is the issue here. And I'm not sure how sophisticated the alarm is on that system. Do you know if it detects motion or vibrations or shocks, or is it just through the opening of the doors inadvertently?
Yeah, from what I read, it actually said doors, trunk, and hood.
Okay, yeah. There are micro switches on all those things you just talked about. All the doors, the trunk, and the hood have micro switches in the latches that tell the system the doors are properly shut. And it's possible that one of those switches is at times intermittently signaling the system that something just got opened when it really didn't.
Huh.
And unfortunately, they're all built into the latches, so there's not a lot you can do.
Are these mechanical or are they electronic sensors?
Well, it's actually a micro switch built into the latches. So when the latch shuts, it also closes a switch that tells the theft computer that the door is, in fact, shut.
I wonder, is that a fused thing? Is it in the fuse box?
It'll be fuse powered somewhere along the lines, but I don't know if it's going to be affected by any one fuse.
Because I remember in our minivan, there was an issue where the car would not lock. And I looked online, and one of those times where you go look online and it actually helps.
Yeah.
And you said you got to just pull that particular fuse and reset it.
Because of corrosion, maybe?
No, it was something in the system, and it needed to be reset from time to time. So I pulled the fuse, put it back, and then the problem went away. Could it be something like that?
So you kind of, it's like power cycling your computer.
Yeah.
Shut it down, restart
Reboot.
It.
Reboot.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you never know, because cars are full of computers, and they do respond to power cycling and all kinds of issues with voltages and grounds. What you can do is pure maintenance. You can get some penetrating oil, maybe some WD-40, and just spray all of your latches, every door and the trunk and the hood, the latches, spray them up very nicely, and then open and shut them 6, 8, 10 times. Make sure they're all shut completely tight and see if that has any effect on it. Otherwise, unfortunately, it's a trip to the dealer, because it's going to require software that they can plug into that car and maybe or maybe not discover a problem.
Hmm.
So that's not an easy one, but that's what I would start with. Start really easy and simple.
Would that be something that the code reader would show if you read the codes?
I put a scan on it and there was nothing there either.
If you're going to have to scan more than just the engine, though, it's probably got an anti-theft module in it that a homeowner scanner won't go to that system.
Right.
But if there was a problem in the anti-theft, it might set a code in there. So it's going to require some diagnosis if the basic cleaning and lubing those latches doesn't do you any good.
Okay.
That's what I'd try. Okay.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Let's go to Jordan, who is on the road. Jordan, drive safely, and you are on with Gordon Fricke.
Thanks. I'm driving an 09 Jetta TDI wagon. And in the past couple of weeks, I've had a check engine light that comes on seemingly intermittently with no real reason why. I did a scan the first time. It gave me a glow plug error. And after a couple times of this thing on and off, I found a pattern in which whenever I hit the fuel, whenever I went to go get gas or diesel in the car and filled it all the way, the check engine light would come back on. I was wondering if there's any sort of correlation possibly between glow plug and fuel light, or I'm lost in
this
one.
Yeah.
The glow plug is for a diesel?
Yeah, the glow plug is the starting aid for a diesel engine. It preheats the combustion chamber, so the incoming air fires up and they get started. It's a cold weather thing. And I know those TDIs of that vintage were sensitive to glow plug codes, and you could test those glow plugs, and they all could test perfectly fine. You can replace them. It's a touchy code on that car. Is that the only code it ever shows?
Yeah, I only scanned it once, but when I first scanned it, it was a glow plug, and I haven't gone back. Like I said, it's on and off every, random, totally random. It's not a pattern I can put down other than when I fill my fuel tank.
Yep. If you scan that car, have it scanned, and find that it's something other than a glow plug code, some type of another emission code, that might lead you into the fuel system. So I think what I would do is scan it again, and if it's still just the glow, that's unaffected by the fuel tank venting and all that stuff. It's a totally separate part of the system. Could be a little corrosion on a connection. You can check the connectors at the glow plugs. It's a big plastic wire thing with some, bullet connectors on it. They need to be perfectly clean. So you can do a little bit of stuff yourself.
If the glow plug wasn't functioning properly, though, it would be tough to start in the cold,
That's
right?
That's just it, Ray. If, let's say, one of the glow plugs has failed and you turn the key on and there's a little yellow light with a picture of a like a glowing wire, and when you went to start it, and if it sputtered and misfired and smoked and ran terribly, you can almost guarantee there's a glow plug failure.
You had that problem, Jordan?
No, car looks great.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I run into this with these cars periodically, and you got to do a little hunting down. And if it only comes on once in a while and you have no running problems, it's really probably not a big deal, you know, but I'd check it out.
That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. You know, just a moment here. The lockbox challenge is going on. And, you know, Gordon,
yeah.
I don't know if you know this, the fun drive starts a week from Monday.
Well, that's why I didn't know that I was coming in today kind of till last minute. I thought the fun drive was going to, you know, fill this week up with early stuff. But
no,
here we are.
No, here we are. And so the fun drive starts a week from Monday. We have this lockbox challenge, and if you can make that $500,000 level, the Spitzer Foundation will throw in another $25,000. I think we're about $80,000 shy of that, $85,000 shy. So we have a little time, but if you want to make your pledge online, WAMC.org, feed the lockbox, we'll get that challenge. It'll be a short fun drive.
Let's see if we can get it done today.
Today?
How much time do we have?
30 minutes.
Oh, boy, I don't know. Let's try it.
Wow, you're more out. Have you been drinking? All right, let's go to Betty in Winston, Connecticut. Betty.
Hi.
Hi.
I just bought a Honda Element 2003 because it had 37,000 miles on it. I really like the car, but as I'm getting accustomed to it, I'm missing very much a keyless entry. And I'm wondering if it's ridiculous. Like, is it even possible to have a keyless entry installed, and would I have to sell a kidney or something to do it?
Well,
how many kidneys do you have, Betty?
Oh, at least three.
Okay, well, I think you can get rid of one without an issue.
Well, yeah, they're good money, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were some aftermarket kits that you could have added to a vehicle that did not have a keyless entry, and you get a little remote, and you hit the button, and they pop.
Right.
I don't know if they make it for this car. I kind of doubt it.
Why?
I just don't think it would be a popular of enough item. There wouldn't be enough demand for some company to make it. But what do I know? Why don't you do a search on the internet and just see if there is such a thing? Or call, if you're not internet savvy, call a big aftermarket shop that does like car starters,
remote starters,
stereos, video, all the stuff that you would add into a car electronically, and see if they know of a kit for your car. Be easy to check.
Okay.
Thanks, Betty.
Thanks.
Appreciate the
Bye.
Call. And the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. You know, I miss the old roll-up windows.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with me? I don't know if you can get them in anything anymore, really. There's probably a few really, really entry-level cars that might still have them, but your kids will probably never know what a crank-up window is.
Oh, no. You're right. They don't know. They've never seen a vinyl record album, for God's sake.
Vinyl's back, though. You can introduce
Not
them
in
to
my
that.
House.
No?
No, because I used to have to truck the albums all around with me every time I moved when I was young.
Well, you were a DJ.
They were very heavy.
Yeah.
So that's another story, another show. 1-800-348-2551. Ted in Pleasant Valley. Ted, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys doing this afternoon?
Good.
Hey, listen, a lady called earlier in the day, and she had a problem with her master cylinder. I had the same symptoms. This master cylinder was replaced about last week, and now I'm experiencing the same thing.
Oh, boy.
Is there anything that would mimic a master cylinder failure like that?
Yep, there is.
Okay, let's hear it.
And I didn't mention it to the first caller because she indicated that she had a bunch of brake work done, but this is what I have experienced many times that fools you into thinking the master cylinder is failing. And it's a stuck brake pad. The brake pad gets rusted in its mount, and it won't move against the brake disc when you step on the pedal.
Okay.
So the brake pad is flexing when you're stepping down on the brake pedal.
Oh,
it's bending it, and then when you release the pedal, it pushes the fluid back, and it gives you way more pedal travel than you should have. And
okay.
It'll fool a lot of guys. So stuck brake pads are not uncommon, especially in the Northeast with all the salt.
Okay, so I just bring this car back in there and say, hey, take a look at the...
Yeah, see if it... Or, you know, air in the system is always a big issue. Sometimes it's hard to get it all out when they bleed the brakes.
Yeah, they did. They bled the thing. Okay,
but Ted already paid for a new master cylinder, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went for the master cylinder.
Yeah, he's already had one done, and his problem didn't go away.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe it's a stuck brake pad.
Okay, if I'm Ted, I'm like, well, I spent a lot of money on the master cylinder. Help me out.
Yeah, what are you guys going to do about this?
All right, well, that's another show.
I know.
Ted, thanks a lot
for
the call.
That's a legal problem.
Exactly, my friend.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good one. All right, this one came in via email from Tariq, who says, a heater blows cold air while the car is running and standing still. Any suggestions?
I know it's a email, so I can't ask any questions, but we find that if a partially plugged heater core is occurring, you'll get heat or some heat when the engine's sped up to, let's say, highway speed, 2,000 RPM, somewhere in that range. But at idle, not enough hot water can go through the heater, and you lose your heat.
So the hot water, the heater core can get clogged because you try to put too much of that leak stopper in it?
Well, that can be the case, or it just clogs up just due to debris and contamination or junk in the cooling system that should be flushed out periodically.
Okay.
So I would be suspicious of that on that vehicle, and it's always important to make sure the coolant is at the correct level. That gets overlooked.
Okay, let's go back to the phones, and Jim in Stone Ridge. Jim, you're up.
Hello.
Hello.
My question's about the an incident with the radio in our Ford Focus, 2001. The radio, just yesterday, the radio cut out for about 30 seconds. That end went totally dead, and... about 30 seconds, the sound and the LED screen went blank, and then 30 seconds later came back on and has worked okay since. So my question is that portend any difficulty with some other part of the car besides the radio?
Just the engine. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think your problem probably is solely in the radio itself, and you can do a pretty untechnical test. If it does it again, bang on it. You know, don't destroy the dashboard, but give it just hammer it a little bit to shock it. And if the second you tap it, it completely comes back on, there's probably something going wrong in the radio, a circuit problem.
So the lights stayed on, the illumination stayed on, but the LED went blank, Jim?
Well, it was daylight, so...
How cold was it outside?
Wendy, how cold was it outside? Yeah, it was maybe 30s, low 30s.
Okay, that shouldn't be then. Sometimes when the electronics get very, very cold,
absolutely,
the screen will go blank.
Yeah, well, something will open up due to the contraction, and it warms up, and it makes its connection again. So I'd be concerned that it could be internal. Some radios have fuses on the back of them, but you have to remove it to see if it's got a fuse actually in the back of the radio. And that fuse, not that it's blown, but like Ray said earlier, sometimes they get corroded in place, and you pull it out and put it back in, and it scrapes up the connector.
See, that was my question about whether the display went blank, but the backlight stayed on. If the backlight stayed on, then the system was still on, and it's a computer problem probably in the radio.
Yes, that's exactly what I think, too. Yep.
But if it went off completely, it's probably just a connection and a cheap fix.
Then it's a major power failure, not major intensive, a big deal, but that you're losing all power to the radio.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, but the good news is only the radio.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to affect other stuff.
Okay, great.
And if he's wrong, call again next show, Jim.
Yeah, tell me if the engine fails tomorrow.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Have a good one. Over to Sean in Kinderhook. Sean, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You listen now. I have a 2003 Nissan Xterra. I'm at the in-laws. My keys are in the ignition. I shut the door. I'm doing something I don't remember. About 5 minutes goes by, and then the truck decides that it's going to lock itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it locked my keys in the car.
Yikes. So
I've never heard of a car just taking it upon itself to lock the doors by itself with the keys still in it.
Yeah, it drives me nuts because this happens more than you think.
This is common now?
When we bring a car into the shop, the rule is get a window down because some cars will randomly lock up with the keys hanging in the ignition.
Well, that's ridiculous.
It happens.
It was ridiculous. And then, you know, my house is a half an hour away, so I had to take the in-law's car, drive a half an hour, break into my house because my car keys are locked in the car.
Sorry.
And then I grabbed my spare set and went back. So, it's crazy. I didn't know that was a common thing now.
You're not alone, and it has to do with the electronics, and I've experienced this quite a bit with General Motors cars. But that doesn't mean they're the only ones that do it, but it happens.
Is there a setting, though? Could you go into a menu setting and say, don't do that?
Well, you can program newer cars to, for example, not lock when you go into motion and things like that.
Yeah.
But this lockup with the door shut and the keys in it is kind of a random thing.
Oh, that's for Pete's sake.
That's
Sean.
Now, I hope one more quick question now. I have a Chevy Cruze that I commute in, and it tells me everything. When the trunk's open, when the door's open, when the blinker's on, it tells me the sex of my unborn child, okay? but it does not tell me when the washer fluid is low. Is this like our friends at General Motors, like, dumb? What happened there?
Yeah, somebody must have forgot to put a sensor in the washer tank. That's probably more important than half the stuff you just mentioned. I know. I understand what you're saying.
Wow. I tell you what, Sean is a bitter man, but I think things will be better for Sean coming up before the next time you're on, Gordon. We're going to take a break here. 800-348-2551. I understand.
Oh, absolutely.
You got to impose on the in-laws, and maybe he doesn't like the in-laws.
Yeah.
You got to drive over to your house. It's a half an hour away.
Break into your own house.
It's awful. It's Gordon Fricke. It's 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Unusual Wedding Rings and More in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield. A jewelry emporium providing traditional and non-traditional engagement, wedding, and anniversary rings for conventional and same-sex couples. UnusualWeddingRings.com. Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, culture, college, cows. DestinationWilliamstown.org. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in the downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. AmherstCopy.com. And Capital Roots, celebrating 40 years of providing fresh food and green spaces for the Capital Region. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for details.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke is here, and he is our guest who is an expert on automotive things, all things automotive. Ray Graff, your host, and Gordon, this one came in via email from our friend Richard, who writes, 2012 Tacoma gas cap, very difficult to remove when tank is low. Takes two hands to get it to move. Had the problem the first year and replaced the cap. What is keeping it from turning when the tank is low?
That's interesting. Because the tanks are pretty well regulated as to the pressure inside.
Yeah.
The vapors can't escape anymore. That's, you know, for many years has been a evap system where you contain all the vapors.
That's right.
So let's say there's a lot more vacuum on the tank when it's low. It might be harder to remove the cap, but I really don't think that's the case because it would almost try to suck the tank in as it got too low. What I find once in a while is if we're either replacing gas caps or somebody comments that it's hard to remove, I'll put some silicone grease or lubricant around the O-ring or the seal that seals the cap up or anything that makes contact with it. And then that makes the cap come on and off way easier.
But it won't fly off, will it?
No. It's still going to be locked in place, but this lubricant will allow it to really unscrew a lot easier. So I would try that.
Is that something you can get at an auto parts store?
Yeah. You can get little tubes of it, like silicone. I wouldn't put petroleum on there because you don't want to put that on rubber seals, but silicone grease is harmless.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Back to the phones we go, and Lloyd in Shushan. Lloyd.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
So I have a 2004 Mazda 6. When I make a right-hand turn, I have an unusual noise that seems to come from the passenger side front tire. And when I make a right-hand turn and the car leans to the left, the noise goes away. When I straighten out or turn left, then that noise comes back, and it comes back more when I turn left. Is that a bearing or axle issue?
Describe the noise. Is it a knocking, clicking?
It's almost like a low hum.
And this is when you're in motion?
Yeah.
Can't reproduce it if you're just turning the wheel without the car rolling.
Correct. It's only when the vehicle's going, and you know, when the car leans to the left in a right hand turn, the noise goes away. It's like the pressure comes off that side of the car.
Oh, I see. Okay, like going through curves at speed.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. It's like a groaning, like a growling sound.
Almost. It's not to that point. It's still at a low hum.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. You've got the beginnings of a wheel bearing starting to go. That's a pretty telltale description of the sound. And that sound comes and goes when you bear through turns because the weight load on that bearing is changing when you go through curves. So that I'm almost sure you're at the beginning stages of a wheel bearing problem.
So you need to lube it or be replacing it?
Replace only. You can't service them anymore. You can't take them apart. You can't grease them. They're self-contained.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Packaged up units.
What has happened to the world?
Is it difficult to change that yourself, or should I bring it to you? Because I'm only over in Shushan.
It's a Mazda 6.
Yep.
Did you say? I believe an 04 Mazda 6 is of the press-in style, which is impossible for the homeowner to do.
Unless you have a press.
Yeah, the later cars had bolt-in units. I really don't think that has a bolt-in unit, but I could check.
All right. Where in Hoosick Falls is your shop?
Don't wait a minute. Go ahead. We can give you address.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm only two towns over.
Yeah,
so.
I know. I know a lot of people that go to Ushak's for their great meats. You must be near somewhere. Yeah.
Mm.
129 Church.
There
Street.
You go.
All right.
Yeah. Hey, Lloyd, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, famous Gordon Fricke, I understand you're doing appearances away from the station now, which we have not approved, by the way.
Well, you know, the Cheney Library in Hoosick Falls, at least a month or two ago, one of the board members came into the shop, and she's a customer of mine, and said, hey, we'd like to just do something some evening at the library. Would you mind just talking kind of like you do on WAMC?
Oh, I see.
And I said, sure, didn't really think much of it.
You're two-timing.
So the date comes closer and closer, and then it's in the local papers, and I've got people asking me like crazy, and I don't know if there's going to be a crowd there or not, but
let's hope it's not a mob or an angry crowd.
But it is tonight at 7 o'clock at the Cheney Library in Hoosick Falls, and it's going to be a show just like this here today, but I'll be standing up there live.
And I won't be there.
And nobody asked you.
Listen, they can't afford me, man.
Hey, if this works, you're in on the next one.
And we'll see. Let's go to Catherine in Stone Ridge. Catherine, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about testing batteries and battery chargers. I've had experience in the past where my car would be just fine. It would start, no problem, you know, and all that, and then it would sit all day on a really cold day in the parking lot at work, and I'd come out, and I wouldn't even get a click when I tried to turn it on, and, like, it would just be totally dead. So years ago, I bought one of those little portable chargers so I wouldn't keep getting stuck. But I've also had mixed reviews on those that you could fry your computer and all that stuff. I would think you could only do that if you did them backwards, but that's another question. But I see these new battery chargers that are like the size of a portable hard drive that have USB ports. You can recharge your phone with them. And they say they're much safer for your car's computers. Do you have any experience with that?
Yeah, you know, those things are really cool because, like you said, they're very small. And you can plug all your stuff in them. I have one, but I haven't unboxed it and done anything with it yet. But it apparently packs a major wallop, and it will jumpstart a car. So, yes, no, they're not dangerous.
Why don't you just buy a new car battery?
Well, no, I did, but in the meantime, you get stranded.
No.
I think that's a great backup plan to have in your car. in the case that you need that, and your devices can get charged up or working if they go dead on you.
Because the other thing is much bigger, and I used to have to plug it in every night to be sure it would have enough of a charge the next day. Now, what I also wanted to ask was, I test my batteries periodically, and when I've had this happen, they always test fine, but I had someone tell me, no, you have to test them under load. Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever you talk to has definitely got some maybe older school experience, which is great because we have the electronic testers.
Yes.
And they're great. However, if there's a battery that's not failing in the normal ways or can't be detected, an old-fashioned load tester will rule out the bad guys immediately. And I have resorted to the load tester many times to have found the battery, in fact, is bad. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
So I need to get a separate piece of equipment that's called a load tester.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't anything you're going to really have yourself. It's, the real good ones are quite expensive.
Well, what can you define quite expensive? Are we talking thousands or are we talking hundreds? Because I think of how much I've paid when I've been stranded.
Yeah, well, I mean...
You know, everything is relative.
Yeah, well, if you had a repair shop that had a load tester in addition to the electronic tester, I'm sure they would test it for you.
Okay.
You can buy some handheld load testers that are not like the real professional ones, but they're better than nothing.
Yeah.
And they're not that expensive. They're probably, I don't know, $40, $50 if you can still buy them.
Well, buy two.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the internet is for.
There you go.
Yeah. One more quickie.
Sure.
Have you heard of these? Well, I'm sure you've heard of these additives for anti-stiction. You know, I always thought you did additives when your car was at 200,000 miles and you were trying to nurse it for another couple of years. You didn't have to spring for a new car right away. But I'm seeing that they seem to be advertised more for maintenance. Do you have any?
Anti-what?
Stiction. That term has just cropped up.
Stiction?
Yes. I don't even know if that's in the Webster's Dictionary.
It's not in the dictionary.
I have run across that term lately, and it has to do with keeping things from sticking.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
What are they doing with you? What do they want you to do? Pour it in the engine oil?
Yeah, it's either goes in the oil or goes in your gas tank.
Yeah.
I've seen them for diesel that go in the tank.
Yeah.
Sounds like Slick 50 used to be.
Yeah, there are some good additives out there, but there's a lot that aren't
good.
They're like supplements. You know, some of them are no good and do more harm than good.
Uh-huh.
You know, like taking supplements.
So how would you tell? Ask a mechanic?
I don't know. Can you trust the internet? That's where you get the stiction to begin with.
Can you put it on a load tester?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Good call.
Yeah.
Tell you what.
Stiction.
She got enough money to buy her own load tester. She probably had three batteries and put them in the trunk, right?
Exactly.
And then you're all set. Let's go to Rick in Ballston Lake. Rick, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a question. I have a 2015 CRV, and I've only had it for about 6,000 miles, and I've noticed when I'm driving it that if I'm driving along and putting the same pressure on the accelerator, as I start to go up the hill, the car seems to pick up RPMs and tries to maintain the same speed, even though I'm not in cruise control. And also, when I'm going down a hill and at a speed, press on the brake, the car seems to shift into a lower gear, and the RPMs come up, almost like a brake. And I'm wondering if these are functions that are built into the car and has something to do with improving the fuel economy, or there's just something wrong with my car.
No, your first hunch is correct. The transmission is sensing load. And Honda started doing that with their transmissions a long time ago. And your vehicle might have what's called a constant variable transmission, a CVT. But in any case, Honda was realizing that if the computer noticed that you were your foot was off of the gas pedal and on the brake pedal, after a certain period of time, it would say, the person wants to slow down. And if it saw the speed decreasing, it would shift the transmission down for you.
Huh.
And that helps the car slow down. It's easier on the brakes. And the same thing going up hills. When enough load is sensed, it will shift the transmission down to maintain the power level, and that in turn puts the RPMs up. So that's normal, what you have happening.
Okay. So it's designed that way, and it has no impact on the transmission or the engine.
No, that's the way they're building them, and no, it doesn't seem to have any adverse effects. It does help fuel economy. That's one of the things that it does do.
The car also has something called an ECON or Econ button.
Yep.
And does that take it out of that mode and put it back in that mode, or what does that do?
Somebody called about that some months ago, and I said all that does is turn on a green light, but that makes the car attempt to be more fuel efficient. Shifts up a little sooner, and it does everything in hopes of saving some economy. So yes, no, that is a real program, a real system.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It makes me feel better about my car.
You're welcome.
That's what we're here for, Rick, to make you feel worse. We often do that as well.
We've had some bad.
So far, it's been good, though. Tom on the road. Tom, are you all right?
I'm all right, buddy. I'm here.
All right. Can you, I guess you got to go hands-free. All right. It's a little noisy, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I can turn off the radio if you want me to.
That would be cool.
Okay. Let me turn off the radio there.
Yeah.
And go to my phone.
Okay.
There we go. Is that better?
It'll work. What? Ask your question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a 98 Mercury Sable wagon. It's driving me crazy. I would have called the Stump the Chump Show, but they're no longer doing the thing. They're Tom and Ray.
Nope.
Anyway, it gets perfect EPA, 24 miles a gallon on highway. I really like the car, 3-liter, 6-cylinder, but it only gets 12 miles a gallon in town. I don't drive hard on it, I'm not a lead foot. Drive it real easy. I took it to a master automotive shop, had him put it on the machine, and all the numbers are perfect. And they can't figure out why it's getting 12 in town consistently. Which is supposed to get 16.
Okay.
And 24 a mile.
All right, Tom, I tell you what. We're going to turn you off. You listen on the radio. The noise is pretty high, and then Gordon will answer your question. So
yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's, of course, very common to get much poorer mileage in, quote, city traffic than on the highway.
Sure.
Some cars, that disparity is much greater than others. Some might get, let's say, 24 highway and 18 city.
Yeah.
I just think that the way that car is designed and the way it's built and the way he drives, that's just the way it is. There's nothing you're going to do about it.
Some cars are like that.
Yeah.
I remember the North Star engine I had in my 99 DeVille, 14, 15 city, hit the highway, it would turn some cylinders off, and
yes,
it would be 30 miles a gallon.
See, that's just it. You had a powerful engine that when you stepped on it in slow traffic or accelerating in town, you used up a lot of gas. Steady cruise on the highway, your foot is barely on the throttle,
yeah,
and it's not using much fuel.
All right, let's see if we can get another call or two in here. Mark in Salem, New York. Mark, you're
actually
on.
I cheated. I'm from Belcher.
Ah, you cheater. All right, well, you're on anyway. You got about a minute.
Way up in Casino Lake. Okay. My mother's 2007 Toyota Scion. The check engine light comes on and goes off, and comes on and goes off, and I find that it doesn't seem to be related to anything. If I put a high test gas with no ethanol in it, fill it right up with that, it usually goes off. If it's damp weather, it may come on or may not, but it's erratic. But definitely when I use the high test, no ethanol, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, it's got 93,000 miles on it. And it just is such an erratic thing. I mean, it could be a nice sunny day out, and it will come on, and then I start the car up again a little while later, and it'll be off.
Huh.
Yep. So
I had it checked at the shop there in Greenwich, and they can't find anything wrong with it. So
yeah, it's always necessary to scan it and see what code is in there. That being said, what you can do yourself, give it a nice treatment of a fuel injection cleaner. Our old friend Tech Ron.
Oh,
yeah.
And that if there's any deposit buildups that are causing this, that will clear them up, and your problem may go away. And you
what
may
was
have
the name of that again?
Tech Ron.
Made by
Chevron.
Okay.
And
yeah,
you may want to put two doses in, not at the same time, but one after the other.
So two tankfuls.
Yeah, exactly.
Of gas.
That's what I would do.
Is it the ethanol that's causing the problem?
It doesn't help, that's for sure. But okay. These cars are all pretty much designed to run on it. Even an 07 car, I don't think has any issues with ethanol.
All right, Mark, we got to run here.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. All right, Gordon Fricke. Your appearance tonight, again, is where?
Cheney Library, Hoosick Falls.
All right, do me a favor.
Yeah.
When you're there, two-timing the station, I want you to mention to everybody there that our lockbox challenge is going on now at WAMC.org. We're trying to make $500,000. If we do that, we'll get another $25,000 from the Spitzer Foundation, and that'll help shorten our fund drive.
I will definitely say that tonight.
All right, and give all the folks my best.
I very much will.
All right, fair enough. Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting the Capital Region's National Natural Landmark with an interactive visitor's center, guided programs, and 20 miles of trails, albanypinebush.org. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here today. He'll be appearing live at a wedding or bar mitzvah near you very soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones are answered by Deb Malik. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff, getting ready for tomorrow, which, as you know, is a Food Friday.